Welcome back to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore via, well, it's actually just Skype. I don't have a clever thing today. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's always good to be on. You know, Fridays are, I guess, good. I don't know. It's weird for us. We don't really operate the same way because most people, like when I had like a real job, I would work like Monday through Friday, and then it's like, it's like the weekend, and like here, it's like, well, there's still games. Like, I don't have to stop paying attention for 2 days.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I haven't had a real job in, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years. Like, I think I quit my last real job in 2009, and so, like, the concept of the weekend doesn't really do anything for me. I mean, my girlfriend's off of work, so that's fun that we get to hang out on the weekend. But other than that, like, the weekend doesn't really mean much except, like, oh, Sunday I'll watch football, and oh, crap, I've got to cover a game Sunday night, so I can't just be in sweatpants all day.
Right, yeah, it does kind of shift.
Blogger problems.
I know, right? Like people that work for a living right now are just like, I hate you.
Especially when they find out we don't have pants on.
Unsubscribe.
Speaking of head injuries, it's a seamless segue right there. Anthony,
this is like a Michael Bay action sequence.
Yeah,
like, you just like burst through a window.
Just burst through a window. I've got two semi-automatic weapons pointed right at you. Anthony Davis is apparently going to be cleared tonight, right?
Reportedly, that's what their early things are starting to say. They haven't, obviously, shoot around hasn't happened yet. Once shoot around happens, we'll get word yes or no, probably.
Yeah, and I don't know. There was a whole controversy with concussion policy because Monty Williams said some semi-ridiculous things, and I wrote about it. I felt pretty strongly about what he said just because, you know, Tom Haberstroh had a great piece last year when LeBron said he was too tough to get a concussion, which is just a stupid message to present to people, especially when you're a role model of young kids. Like, brain injury should be taken seriously. And as someone who has had multiple concussions before, I can tell you, like, it can be a pretty scary and disorienting thing that lasts for months. I had one concussion from playing basketball where I couldn't drive for 3 weeks, and I didn't feel right for probably 3 or 4 months.
God, what happened? Tell me about what happened.
Well, it was end of the game, and they were fouling to prolong the inevitability of a loss, and I got the ball. I don't know, like opposite free throw line, started dribbling up court, trying to avoid people. And some guy I don't even really know how he hit me. The next thing I knew, I was on the ground and looking up at people staring at me. And one of my prouder athletic accomplishments, though, hit both free throws.
Wow.
While I could barely, which is, you know, there have been times where I've, missed free throws completely conscious. So missed a lot of them. So that was probably one of the more impressive athletic things I've ever done in my life. But I actually drove home. I mean, I didn't know I had a concussion. I didn't know anything was really wrong, and I drove home, and it was about a 15-minute drive, and when I got home and I parked, I was like, "Oh my God, I should not have driven." Like, I didn't remember the drive home at all.
Yeah, that's
and,
not good.
Yeah, and so I went to the doctor, got a CAT scan, and he told me I had a pretty good concussion, and I was just like dizzy for weeks, and didn't feel comfortable driving for about 3 weeks, and I still think I have memory issues to this day. Like, I didn't used to have a bad memory, and now my short-term memory is pretty bad. Like, I forget to do stuff all the time and stuff that I mean to do. And, I mean, just the effects. And that was, God, that was 10 years ago, 9 years ago, something like that.
I studied psychology in college, and I did a stint where I'm working with neuroscience. And one of the things that you learn that people don't really get, because we kind of trust doctors, like, you know, we're at a point now where we're like, oh, well, doctors just know a lot because they're so smart. Doctors are very smart. Neuroscientists are exceptionally smart. The problem is the human brain is unfathomably complicated.
Yeah.
And it is really almost impossible to figure out everything that goes on. And we are only now really starting to get an understanding of how it works.
Right.
And I'm not saying how concussions work. I'm talking about the brain itself. Then you factor in damage, which is not standard. It's not like a break, right? So like a fracture, you know what the impact is depending on where it happens because you can figure out the physics of structurally what's going to happen there. With a concussion, you're talking about brain damage.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know how I can get this across to people. Like, this is not like, when he said a little – by the way, the phrase a little touched up was not exactly a great turn of phrase either there, Monty. But when he said that, I'm like, you know, even if it was a mild concussion, even if it was a light concussion, you know, that's still going to happen. And we see it now. Like, you know, he wanted him to play on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's Friday, and he's still a question mark. That tells you where they're at. And part of that is because of the – he can talk about the policy. But the problem is that policy was put into place because it's not the obvious things. That's one of the problems is the lingering effects of a concussion have nothing to do with things that are pretty simple. Like, are you
right.
Okay? Yeah. Like, yeah, you're going to be able to answer that. Like, do you know where you are? Yeah, but it's not about that. It's about, like, disorientation and possible impacts on motor skills. And especially those things can really be – you know, can be increased with stress – and physical activity. Like, that's why they tell you to take it easy, because the body, when the body has an injury and you don't rest on it, it gets worse.
Yeah.
And you suffer other problems. And, you know, the effeminate stuff in his comments to me, like, I'm a big gender guy. So, like, that was just, I don't really see, you know, that's a terrible example. You know, a friend of mine who shall go on nameless said, you know, Monty's got daughters. Like, that's not a good example to be thrown out there.
And it's important, you know, he's a old school tougher guy, and I get I get the generational gap with this kind of stuff and how it used to be kind of just rub some dirt on it and walk it off. But it's just like and there were comments on my piece that I wrote where they're like, oh, this article is ridiculous. It shows you how soft society has come. I think from your experience with me, like, I am not one of those sensitive people to other people's plights. I mean, I have a kind of, you know, just get over it and deal with it kind of mentality. I'm not the best for relating to stuff like, oh, maybe this guy's not being too sensitive, because, you know, I usually just kind of blow things off like that. But with brain injuries, considering I've had one and how serious, you know, we've seen the effects can be with athletes, mainly football players, but, you know, other athletes as well. It's just like, that's one of those things where I think, like, taking that kind of line on it is just irresponsible.
I don't know what to, I mean, other than we've done the hand-wringing part of this, but I don't know what needs to happen, because now the NBA hasn't done its due diligence in terms of trying to educate. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously I think the players are maybe being educated more than the coaches, but
and that, maybe that's something where maybe they are doing a good job, but Monty Williams just doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that gets lost. Is like, you know, we put it on the league, but it's like at some point, I mean, you give coaches information, and so much of it they're just going to completely blow off. It's part of the makeup of the job. Like, they just do, they just blow stuff off. I think it's, you know, I'm glad the NBA is taking a policy. I think it's been a really good thing. I think it's really smart, and I think that because it's one where I'm like this with a lot of things, including a situation that's unfolding in football right now that I don't want to get into because it's not NBA related, but like there are personal matters and things that go on in these guys' lives that are more important than the outcome of a game. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, him being like Anthony Davis being mentally okay long term is way more important than whether or not they can beat, you know, whoever, Charlotte tonight. Like,
right,
it's okay. Like, it's gonna be okay. It's frustrating to me that this continues to be the perception, and like, I appreciate the whole old school thing, but it gets bothersome. I will, however, on a lighter tone, share with you my incredibly embarrassing concussion story.
Oh yeah.
So I'm in, eighth grade, and, I'm in off season football practice. And we're doing conditioning, and we're doing the bleachers, right? Running up the bleachers, run up the bleachers, run down the bleachers, run up the bleachers, run down the bleachers. Well, it's early in the morning, and it's one of those spring mornings, so there was frost, and then it had started to melt, so there was dew, right? And the bleachers were wet. And I stepped, and I remember the feeling of the foot sliding off of the one I was going up, so I'd already extended to go forward.
Yeah.
Before it had left, but my other one hadn't landed. I go horizontal and smack head first onto the bleachers.
That sounds like a cartoon.
It really kind of was. The other problem was I like cracked my shin and got like a bone spur in my shin, which still bothers me to this day, which sucks. But so I land and I kind of lay there. I'm unconscious for 5-10 seconds. I wake up and look at her and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And the problem was if we finished behind a time or if anybody stopped, everybody had to go do the entire course again.
Yeah.
So teammates are yelling at me to get up because they think I'm just tired.
And you're trying to get a standing eight count at this point, right?
Right. And I'm kind of slumped over to the side, and one of my friends runs up behind me. My friend Brian runs up behind me, and he's like, "Matt, you got to get up, man. You can't rest, man. You got to get up." And he turns me over, and he sees the knot on my head, and audibly yells, "O.S." so loud everyone in the stadium could hear it. I'm pretty sure some people in the school nearby. So he's like, "I'm going to go get help. Stay here." Brian, of course, continues running bleachers to make sure that he doesn't get in trouble for not finishing.
Oh, naturally.
I kind of stagger down the steps, almost fall off the railing, stagger down. I'm walking across. Wheeler hasn't reached him yet because he's gone the long way around. But Brian hasn't reached him. He's gone the long way around. Coach is storming across the field at me, livid. What are you doing? More, I swear to God, one more time from you. Can't believe you're doing this again. Just about ready to tear me up.
I can't believe you've pulled the old slip on the bleachers routine again.
Until he sees my head and he stops and he says, "O.S." And he's like, "Are you okay? Stop walking." And they kind of carried me into the coach's office and called my father. And we're like, "Yeah, pretty sure he's got a concussion because your son's a pretty bright boy and he didn't really know where he's at right now."
Yeah.
So that was that was my terribly embarrassing concussion experience. And then I had a knot in my head for two more days, and people call me Igor and things like that. So
what's funny is obviously there are bad looking concussions, and then there are ones like Anthony Davis where it didn't look that bad.
No,
it looked like a little collision to the side of the head, but that you were saying, that's the thing about the brain is, we don't know how it works, and we don't that much, and we don't know the damage that can be done even with the slightest of things. And you look at the video, and I'm shocked he's been out this long. I'm shocked he was out at all.
You can be in a car accident and not get a concussion. You can get hit in the head with a frying pan lightly, and you can get a concussion. These things are just really temperamental. Again, it's the nature of the brain and not being able to, and it differs so much from person to person because everybody's a snowflake and everybody's brain's different. There's just there's a lot of ways the egg can get scrambled.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to name this podcast "Everybody's a Snowflake." yeah. All right. So there were some semi-outrageous thoughts about the whole concussion issue, not just from Monty Williams, from people that really think it's not that big of a deal, and whatever. I don't need to preach to them. But something I will get a little soapboxy about is this whole Mike Brown son thing.
Uh-oh.
We don't have to really get into it that much, but the fact that you would find Mike Brown's son on Twitter, send him death threats because the Lakers are 1-4, that's just stupid.
Which part is most ridiculous? Is it that they found somebody they found his son on Twitter, that they gave his son a death threat, or that he gave his son a death threat over going 1-4?
Yes.
What's the most ridiculous part of
that? Yes. My answer is yes. It's the whole thing. What was the thing? You search out Mike Brown and you find out he's not on Twitter, but Elijah Brown comes up and you do your homework a little bit. The thought process around this whole thing, considering there is even a thought process that isn't some Neanderthalic, mindset, is just insane to me. I love basketball. I love sports. I get as annoyed as anybody when the Atlanta Braves lose a baseball game. I get frustrated when the 49ers give up a 20-yard run, which luckily hasn't happened much in the last 2 years, but it does still happen. I've never thought I need to get violent and even fatally violent over sports, and I just don't understand how that happens. And I'm not even trying to be like, oh, I'm such a better person, even though I do, like, I'll just be honest, if you are giving death threats about sports, I do feel like I'm a better person than you. Like, that's just, like, you've gotten to a point of just this horrible cellar of society. And I guess I just don't understand how that connection happens, and maybe I'm, you know, trying to give people the benefit of the doubt to think that it couldn't happen with certain people.
To me, it's about not understanding consequences and not being able to understand consequence. Like, it's not even about this situation. It's about anything. It's you feel that you can do these things that there are no consequences. Not understanding how a death threat is going to make somebody feel. Because I don't.
Is it entitlement? Or is it just not understanding consequences? Or maybe it's both. I don't know.
I think it's both. They feel entitled that. I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot. Like, fans, there's an ingrained sense of entitlement with fandom because,
yeah.
And you know, getting back to psychology, like when you invest yourself into something, the way that people do with sports, and it's not just sports. I try and explain it. Like, you can be fanatical about lots of things.
Yeah.
And when you invest yourself into something like that, it's not just something that you do. It's a part of your life, and that's one of the differences. Is like. I mean, to be perfectly honest, like I appreciate the fact that people are not like that, but at least are that it's a big part of their lives, because that's why you and I get to do what we do for.
Oh, life. Sure, we wouldn't have this job if.
Right, like casual fans are not listening to this podcast.
Right, just you basketball nerds that have decided to click play.
Exactly. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Don't send death threats though. And
well, that's I mean, I've received death threats because of stuff I've written. Have you?
Yeah, I've gotten I think 5 total, because and it was especially bad when my mom started reading the comments, and then she found one, and then I got like a frantic phone call about how, yeah, I need to call the FBI, and I'm like, Mom, it's gonna be okay, like,
yeah,
it's fine.
No, but when I started with CBS, my mom read one of my first things, and she was like, oh, I'm gonna leave a comment. I said, don't ever look at the comments.
Don't ever. Ever.
Like, and if you do, just trust me, like, I'm okay. Like, I'm not worried about it.
And what's bad is this becomes what, you know, the kind of the fans are emblematic of. When my brother-in-law told me something really, really helpful about the whole commenter thing, which is something that writers haven't had to deal with until, like, our generation, right? Like,
yeah.
You would deal with letters to the editor, but the guy still has to sit down and write the thing. It's not as easy as clicking on the button and typing in whatever vitriol you want to spew.
I couldn't even find a pen right now if I wanted to, let alone paper.
So my kid's probably eating them all.
this podcast.
Right. So this is something kind of new to deal with. My brother-in-law, though, was talking about how he told me, he was like, you need to think about what percentage of the people that actually read your thing and liked it or, you know, have an opinion on it, how many of those people are actually the ones that comment? And once you start thinking about that, like, so I started telling other writers that. I was like that's what your approach needs to be to the commenters. Because commenters are almost always going to be negative. Because if you agree with something, are you just going to type, I agree with this, and have, yeah, a good, like, no, like, that's not fun. There's nothing fun about that. But saying you're an idiot, you know, and I hope you die, like, that's fun to them.
Right.
So I think, but I agree with you that I don't understand the kind of process. I think trying to understand where it comes from, I think, does get back to the consequence thing.
Yeah.
I think it gets to, they don't understand why they shouldn't do that versus all of us that understand that. It's so natural. It's like, obviously you should not send death threats about sports, especially not to his son. That's the other thing, man. It's like,
yeah,
going after the kids. Like
he's,
as a dad,
he's a teenager,
like,
you know?
I mean, I would, you know, I that's like my automatic block on Twitter is if you start talking about my son, like, as a dad, like, and Mike, you know, get on Mike Brown for not getting, you know, he's not going to overreact to it. He's just going to be like, whatever.
Which is probably the right reaction, is to not give it any credence.
Yeah,
because
the more you do, the more people will react to it.
Yeah.
Which is why he's a better man than me, because, God, I would be up on it. I would call the press conference and be laying into people. Like, I would be going insane. But speaking of Lakers, I did want to get your reaction to Dwight's comments yesterday, which, of course, when I found the quotes, I was like, oh, this is going to be this will be our most retweeted thing of the day. And
sure, yeah, was. That was
I felt bad, I'll admit this. Sorry. I wanted to put in the headline, Dwight Howard tells Kobe Bryant that they both need to chill out.
Yeah.
But there honestly wasn't room in our system.
So and you
need to
just...
get the SEO on it, so it just turned into Dwight Howard tells Kobe Bryant he needs to chill out. Which makes it sound like Dwight's like, whatever, man, we're going to be fine. And then, like, that's not how it was.
That's kind of like the Chris Bosh, we just want to chill
yeah.
thing.
Like Dwight was more, Dwight was trying to say, like, well, we just need to make sure that we don't get frustrated. My problem, the reason I did go ahead and write it the way I did, though, was I never got the impression that Dwight was frustrated. Like, I don't see that on the floor. I think he puts on a mask and does it in postgame after they lose to act upset.
Yeah.
But, like, people were, like, that was where kind of my column on Wednesday night came from, was, you know, people were tweeting about how Dwight stayed around to sign autographs and was laughing and joking with fans. Now, I want to make it very clear. I think it's great that Dwight does that. Like, that's very good of him because the fans need that. And I like that he's got perspective to not be like I, you know, this is the difference between you and me, because I'm sure you prefer Kobe's, like, storming into the locker room, chewing on his jersey. Like, I said, no one go in there. Like, don't be alone with him. That was what I said.
I didn't see the, you know, that there's that short video of just, like, the death stare. And yeah. I didn't see that during the game. Like, I was still post game of the Wolves game, so I was kind of I kind of powered through the game, and once it was in hand, I just stopped watching. But when I saw the video, I was like, "Oh God, this is great!" And not because I have no feelings one way or the other towards the Lakers. I love watching them play, whether they're good or bad. I love watching Kobe play, but I do love seeing that competitive, like, insanity.
And it's fun, but I think I'm honestly afraid of it. I'm also a little bit afraid of it. And so, like, Dwight, I kind of understand a little bit more from the perspective of him being like, you know, it's like, we're going to be fine. It's one game. Like, I'm still going to enjoy myself. But I, from an analyst perspective, I can't look at that situation and be like, well, this is obviously going to be okay. Because I'm like, look, you got one guy that's got a huge ego that thinks everything's totally cool. We just need to laugh and have fun and love lives. And
right.
Then you got me. I'm like, this will be fine if they start winning again, but I don't know how this is going to go over, because I don't know, like, Kobe's not going to respond that well, because part of it is Kobe's expectations of you rise with how good you are. Like,
yeah.
He has a high expectation for guys, but he does understand there's different talent levels. It frustrated Lamar Odom because Odom could be better, but he also knew Odom wasn't a star. Howard is a guy that's supposed to carry this team, and if there's a differential there in the attitude that they need to take, you know, that's something I think to keep an eye on. If not a, there is a problem. It's, I'm trying, like, I do this, like, I try and identify trends early. Like,
yeah.
And they can change, they can, but I'm also, you know, we have room to microanalyze this stuff. Like, Kemba gets driven nuts by this stuff because he wants to wait for the big picture, which is a better approach, but I don't get paid to do that. I get paid to microanalyze.
Yeah. The thing is, like, Dwight has played pretty well. I mean, I think he's probably been their best player just because of both sides of the ball. I mean, Kobe's been their best offensive player. I mean, Dwight's been very good on defense, but he hasn't been Dwight on defense, so maybe he hasn't been their best player because you need him to be Dwight.
But I also don't want to hold him to the standard of himself, though. Like, him being better than everyone else should be good enough, even if he hasn't been as good as he has been.
Yeah, that's fair if... I mean, I think it depends. Like, you can say new situation, new injury, new coach. Like, that's why maybe he's not being his old self. And so, you know, there is an adjustment period. If he's still not the defensive force he used to be in, you know, by February, then we might start thinking, like, oh, was Dwight really that good, or was it Stan Van Gundy's system? Is Dwight really putting forth the effort, or is he concerned about being a celebrity in LA? You know, like, those stories will come up and those questions will come up. So maybe it is too early to kind of get into whether or not he should be his old self.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, they win tonight. They got Golden State tonight without Bogut, who's been shut down for 7 to 10 days. So it's Dwight versus Carl Landry and maybe Biedrins if he's feeling healthy enough.
Jeremy Tyler.
So, you know, he'll probably have a really strong game. They should win this game. They're at home. You know, this should be where they start to get right. Like, this is the kind of thing that, and it's broken their way in terms of the injuries. So,
although, I mean, this is not a good perimeter defense for the Lakers, and you've got Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Harrison Barnes. This could be a dangerous. I mean, they should absolutely win, especially with no Bogut. I mean, they should win with Bogut out there, but without Bogut, they should still, you know, they should dominate this game. But there's a lot of firepower on Golden State's side.
Yeah, there's some firepower. It hasn't, you know, they haven't been great offensively, so we'll have to see kind of if they can play that level. It'll be, I mean, it'll probably be a good matchup. You know, it'll either be a good matchup or it'll be, you know, not Pistons-esque, but the Lakers could assert the thing. It's like, I keep waiting for that game. The Lakers do get it. They're just going to, like, detonate. And the Pistons wasn't really a fair one because of how bad the Pistons are. So I feel like they've got one in them. I thought it might have been Utah, but, you know, Utah really played well to surprise. So
Utah's at Denver tonight. You know, I feel like Utah is about to really make some noise. Like, this team feels like they're capable of a lot more to me, and that it could come pretty soon.
I disagree. I look at where they are, and I think there's a ceiling. I think they caught the Lakers at the right time, you know, and then, like, the Spurs loss to me kind of is indicative of that's a good example of the gap that exists there.
Sure.
That's kind of my thing. It's like, you know, there's such a gap between them and the elite teams. And you have to be able to at least, like, you know, hang with them. Like, you have to be able to at least be able to hang. And, you know, if you want to put Denver in that category, which I don't think you can, you know, maybe tonight's a good sign, but I think even if they win tonight, it's not necessarily indicative because Denver's still figuring out a lot of things. Although Denver looks much better the last two games than they did in the first three games. Imagine that. The Dallas win. Here's the other thing: that Dallas win was a quality win for them in terms of the opponent. That was Dallas's first back to back, coming off an emotional opener versus the Lakers.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge letdown game. So I look at that and then I'm like, look, they lost to New Orleans, got, you know, really destroyed by the Spurs, and Memphis handled them, which that also was not a good sign. So I feel like there's a lot of concerns here. The Jazz can go either way. I think they're going to be schizophrenic for a while. I think they'll wind up winning more games than they lose. You know, but I do wonder, you know, Rob Mahoney over at SI had a thing about guys need more minutes this week, and Derek Favors was the guy he led off with, and everyone loves Favors. I personally tend to be like, I love Favors, but, you know, Paul Millsap's pretty freaking good. And people say you can put them together, but then you get into, there's some matchup problems that kind of get complicated. So I end up feeling like Utah is going to have to make a decision at the deadline. I still feel like because of the contract situation with both Jefferson and Millsap up for new contracts, they're going to have to make a decision about one of these guys to commit to at the deadline.
But do they? Like, can't you just go into the summer and see who had a great second half, who has good playoffs, and
why would you do that if you can move forward right now? Like, if you can make a trade right now, they might be able to get you to move forward.
But
why not do that?
Why can't you, I mean, have a handshake deal on draft night to sign and trade Al Jefferson if he's willing? I mean, that, you know, you're not allowed to talk before then, but everyone talks before then.
Well, the sign and trades are going to be limited because of the new CBA this summer.
Well, right, but it's not, I mean, they're not over the cap. Like, there are teams not over the cap that would take on that contract. Like, I don't think it's going to be so limited that there won't be a market for Al Jefferson or Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're going to make a deal, you might as well try to get it involved in the draft in some way. And in February, guys aren't giving away their lottery picks, you know?
I guess the other thing is that I look at it from a distraction standpoint. Like, Favors wants the minutes. Like, he's not just like, you know, like, oh, yeah, you know, I want to play more, I want my opportunity. Like, he's aggressively like, I want to play, I want to start. Like, he's ready to be that guy. And if they believe that he is that guy, I'm like, why are you creating a situation in the locker room where there's, you know, potential tension? Like, go ahead and get the deal done. But that may just be my, you know, impulsiveness in terms of trades. I do think that, you know, the Nuggets matchup, that's going to be interesting, you know, because they've got really great strength down low. You know, Jefferson, skilled centers can do some damage against Denver, and because they've got really unskilled guys. They've got athletes, not skilled. So that's going to be something, I think, to watch. Corey Brewer versus Gordon Hayward should be fun. I like that
one.
Yeah,
that'll
be
fun.
I like Ty Lawson versus Mo Williams.
I think that I think the idea of Millsap against Fareed really intrigues me for the fact that Fareed is not a good defender. I mean, everyone loves Fareed because he's rebounding, he's dunking, and he's a lot of energy, but he's not a good defender.
Not in space. He's getting better in the post because he's worked so much on strength. He's getting a lot better in the post I've seen this year.
Yeah.
In space, he's such a disaster.
And where does Paul Millsap like to do his damage?
In space.
Yeah. That's going to be a huge, huge test for Kenneth Fareed.
And the Jazz rebound really well, so it's going to be interesting to see if they can control the offensive glass, which has been, you know, if they can control the defensive glass, which is where, you know, Denver's really been strong with JaVale and Kufus, you know, tapping stuff in. That's where they've been really strong, so that's going to be kind of key. And then Marvin Williams, 500 days of Marvin, continues tonight versus Andre Iguodala.
They've just got to stop. I mean, I was talking to a couple of guys at the Wolves Magic game as we were trying to distract ourselves from the terror that was happening on the court in the first half, and the Jazz came up, and there was this resounding fact of why are the Jazz playing Marvin Williams? Why do people keep giving him starters minutes? And also, I mean, he's a fine player, but good God. Like, put Hayward out there, develop Burks. Like, you've got options.
Thing is, he's been good to start this year, which is what he did last year. He's doing the exact same stuff that he did last year. And
sure,
the Jazz fans are buying in. He had a huge bucket the other night versus the Lakers to kind of put the lead out of reach.
He's just good enough to play.
That's, yeah, I would agree with that. He is just good enough to play. Does Brooklyn get right versus Orlando tonight?
If they don't, good God. Jameer's not playing, I don't think.
Jameer might play.
Okay, even if Jameer...
He's been upgraded questionable.
Let's say Jameer plays. Should Darren Williams worry about Jameer Nelson?
Comparatively, yes, but not overall.
I would even say comparatively, no. I mean, Jameer's a decent point guard, but Darren Williams should dominate that matchup the entire night. And even if he doesn't, this Orlando team sucks. Like, the first two games were fantastic. It was a great Disney movie. This team sucks.
Glenn Davis versus Chris Humphreys.
Oh, my God.
How about Aaron Aflalo? The good one is Aaron Aflalo versus Joe Johnson. That one's pretty
good. That'll be fun. That'll actually be really fun to watch.
And then what you got?
Is Gerald back?
No, I don't believe so. I think he's still. I think he's game time tonight, but they're leaning towards Sunday.
Okay, so that means there could be a time where you have Keith Bogans and Andre Blatch on the court at the same time. I guess Orlando has a chance.
Gustavo Ayon and who's there? Oh, I can't remember if it's Vucevic or Vucevic. That guy versus the other Nikola versus Brook Lopez. So Brook Lopez should have a big night.
The defense has been rough, but I've really enjoyed watching Brook Lopez play again. It's a weird game. He has a very weird game.
Fun game. I love his post stuff. He's great. I love any center that can hit the one step back foot post fadeaway jumper. Love that move. I just think it's such a beautiful move. And you know, Dirk doesn't even really do it so much in the low post because he doesn't want to get hammered. And so I love guys that can actually have the body to do it.
And his set shot. He's got that like bank set shot from like 17 feet that has got to be just really disorienting to try to defend because he never looks like he's about to shoot.
This game, next one I want to talk about is I would describe it as the Friday the 13th part 12.
Oh no!
Game of the night, Philadelphia Boston. We get that one again.
Oh, that's fun.
No Bynum, no Jay Rich.
Oh well, no Jay Rich. I'm not watching.
Boston has been flat out bad. The defense for Sixers has been really good. The defense for Boston has been really bad. I guess here's the thing. Boston will probably win, and then it'll be – the Sixers can be like, oh, but it was Boston. They're a really good team. Versus if Boston were to lose, it would be like, oh, God.
Is Evan Turner really leading the Sixers in rebounding right now?
I think so.
Good God.
Evan's a weird – that's a weird one to figure out because I like – Turner's one where I like – I'm going to put this. I like the thought of what he's trying to do.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to try and make plays. I'm going to try and be versatile. It's just that he's not very good at it.
Yeah, it's just no one's told him he's Evan Turner.
Right. So, like, that's a problem. Drew Holiday's been really fantastic. I mean, I've been catching grief from Sixers fans because I didn't like the extension. He has been really good. We'll see how he does against Rondo tonight. That one's good. The big headline are Dallas, New York.
Can the Knicks keep up the undefeated streak? And can the Mavs? I mean, the Mavs are 4-1. Like, that's...
Yeah. One loss between these two teams. That's, you know, without Dirk, well, you got Darren Collison versus Raymond Felton. That one's pretty good. You've got J.R. Smith versus OJ Mayo. Oh, that's such a it's such a mirror there. Oh, like OJ's got a little bit of head on him, but wow, that's amazing. And then I think Marion's still out, so oh wow, Melo's gonna have himself a night.
Oh no, Marion, yeah, Mel, you might want to, if there's a prop bet, you might want to take the over on whatever Melo's scoring over under is. Interesting one, I think, is Heat at Hawks. The Hawks, you know, everyone loved them in the preseason, and I mean they're 2-1. They've been good. It hasn't been pretty, and you can say that's, you know, Josh Smith's ankle, but this is a big test to see just how much of a preseason darling they actually were.
This is the Utah San Antonio game of the East. That's
yeah.
how I put it.
Yeah, that's a good call.
This is going to be, and see, I won't be discouraged because I don't have that high expectations for Atlanta. I expect them to just, you know, maybe there's a good chance they'll be in contention for a playoff spot. But like Jeff Teague, here's the thing with Miami: their defense doesn't let guys go off. Like you can rack up points on them as a whole, but they're going to target your strengths. So Jeff Teague is going to get LeBron, and and you know they'll probably put Battier on. Josh Smith, assuming he's back. You know, Bosh Horford is pretty favorable towards Heat, as good as Horford is. And then, you know, you're talking about Atlanta shooters versus Miami shooters, which is largely a wash. You know, so then it comes down to the offensive firepower of, you know, Dwayne Wade and LeBron with Bosh. You know, because I mean, and here's the thing, like, it's like, oh, Teague, Josh Smith, Al Horford. I really like that three-man combo. I really like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh a lot more.
Yeah. They're slightly better.
I will say this, though. So last year there was that disgusting game where the Heat bench beat the Atlanta starters on national television.
It was like triple overtime, wasn't it?
Yeah, which was I think that was that the start of Never Trust the Hawks?
No. I haven't trusted the Hawks for a couple of years. I think maybe that, like, that got it to more of a meme level, but that was also like the true introduction to Ivan Johnson.
Yeah, it was. That really was. I feel like, but if you watch the other games, what was weird about that game, like the Hawks had beat them the week before. Like this team, Larry Drew actually does a pretty good job scheming against Miami. So that's like kind of their big hope. I think the best game in the West tonight is probably Houston Memphis.
Yeah, that should be interesting to see how they defend James Harden. Because
I'll say, if Houston loses again, then it's going to be like the rise and fall of Beard Sandy will have been about 4 days.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he would have to have like 30 points.
Yeah, this will be three straight. They're going to sick Tony Allen on him. You know, you got Mike Conley versus Jeremy Lin is not favorable towards Lin.
No.
I mean, Ashik will do well, but Ashik's going to be going up against Marc Gasol, who's a lot more talented.
I mean, Ashik will do well in the sense of, like, rebounding, and he'll play good defense, but, like, he's not giving you anything on offense.
Well, and Gasol can also kill him by going out to range.
Like, yeah, that's true.
You know, they can run. The Grizzlies don't use him a lot because they just don't for various reasons, but they can really, I mean, you can run pick and pop with Gasol, and he's going to shoot. You know, he'll shoot probably 5 of 10 to 11 from there.
Chandler Parsons versus Rudy Gay will be fun.
Oh, that one will be really good. That'll be great. That'll be so much fun. And I like the benches too. I like, you know, you got Delfino and Bayless and all the, and Spates and all those guys. That should be that. Yeah, that one should be really fun.
And then game of the night, Pistons at Thunder, just for the simple fact that either Durant or Westbrook will get 45 points tonight, or maybe both. Who knows?
Westbrook's got to get, man. Westbrook's in such a slump. Oof, rough to watch. Rough to watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game last night, but I went through and checked out his just the video of his shot attempts, just to see how, if I was correct in how, you know, I wrote about on the 4-point play, how he might be defended. And just God. You at this point, like, I mean, there are some people that just don't like Westbrook, so they won't feel this way. But a lot of people just got to be thinking, like, I just want him to get in a rhythm shooting the ball for one game.
Yep.
Just so he can feel a little confidence back.
Cleveland Phoenix.
Bleach my eyes. That is not going to be fun. I mean, it'll be fun to watch Kyrie Irving do whatever the hell he wants.
Actually, Dragic Irving could turn into a pretty fun little matchup, and then just offensively, because neither one could stop the other one.
Right.
And then Barajow's back, but Deion Waiters is out, so you know there goes their biggest scoring punch. I gotta stop it. Deion's working hard. I gotta lighten up on the kid.
It's not him. It's the fans. Just
yeah. Well, I've got three Cavs writers on HP. So
yeah,
I've got three guys on my site that write for me. They're Cavs fans that have been talking to me about how good he's going to be, and I just can't get there. Your Wolves, Indiana.
This will be.
Can they keep it going?
I mean, Indiana's been playing like crap. So yeah, I mean, I think they could. Last year they had this weird fight with Danny Granger and Kevin Love, and neither will be there playing tonight. So it shouldn't be as contentious because both guys kind of try to get into like a little skirmish to fire themselves up at times. And the Wolves actually have good bench players now, which is a new strategy that I haven't seen in 23 years. So that'll be interesting. I am curious to see how, because the Wolves have been making, you know, their success on defense so far, and the Pacers are struggling as an offense. I think they're 26th or 27th in the league right now, but their defense is really good, and the Wolves' offense has struggled. So it could be a very ugly game in terms of just plays happening, shots going in the basket.
If Pekovic kills Hibbert, how sad will you be?
I will be a little sad because Roy Hibbert has kind of become my guy lately. But I mean, this was preseason, so it doesn't matter. But Pekovic destroyed Hibbert in the first preseason game, and they played significant minutes against each other.
Hashtag never surrender.
I mean, he will never surrender. That's evident. I am a little worried about Hibbert remaining frustrated with his play because it just has not been a good start to the season, a good start to his new contract. And Pekovic is a guy that, especially with taller guys like that, you know, he has so much leverage and he's so strong anyway that he can really frustrate guys.
Yeah, that could be a major problem for them. I think. Man, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I gotta do picks here in a minute. I'm probably gonna do Wolves. I'm probably gonna go with the Wolves to cover.
What's the line?
The line is Wolves minus one. They're giving one.
Whew.
Oh man, and you were right with a 182.5 over under.
I would take the under.
Yeah.
I mean, neither team can score right now. That's the weird thing is the Wolves have been built around this Adelman system and bringing in players to play in it, but they're not really hitting shots.
That's still really low. I think it's the second lowest one I can see behind Hornets Bobcats, which is at 181, which is just abysmally low. The line is stretched to minus two. The Wolves are favored by two.
Okay. Yeah, probably. I mean, if they're going to win, I don't think it's going to be a close game, or I don't think it's going to be like a down-to-the-wire game if they win.
It could get really ugly if it does, man. Those two teams try and construct game-winning offenses.
I mean, I don't even know where the Wolves would go.
J.J. Barea isolation, that's where they would go. Oh, no, I'd be Roy. Oh, they just let Roy be the hero.
All right, Roy has been terrible scoring the ball. He was good at the end of the first game when they needed key buckets down the stretch. What's weird is he had a very – Ben Polk pointed this out at the game the other night. He had a very Rubio stat line against Orlando. It was like – I think he had 0 points on like 0-of-2 shooting or something like that, had 9 assists, 4 boards, something like that. It was a very Rubio. He is filling the Rubio void right now.
Brandon Roy filling the void of a 17-year-old Spanish Latino pop star. Not Latino, but Spanish pop star.
Yeah, I mean, there's a story. That could get awkward.
Good podcast, Zach. This is strong.
strong podcast. I appreciate you putting on the pink drawers and letting everybody be a snowflake.
Everyone's a snowflake. Y'all have a good weekend.
Thanks, man. Thanks for listening to CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the action, and we will talk at you Monday.